Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 30th of June. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And I'm Charles Archer.
How are things there? How's everyone been doing this week? All good?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. It's been sunny. Yeah.
We've had our summer. Now we look out and it's a bit. I don't know what it's like with you, Charles, but it's a bit overcast now. It's cooled off. I mean, it's probably in line with what the normal average temperatures should be for the end of June. But is that the summer over?
Possibly. British summers, Devon summers. No one really knows what's going to happen. I know that I worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I'm working today. So inevitably tomorrow it will be cloudy and overcast as we head to the beach.
Why is it always like that? Is it just for the office workers who don't get the opportunity to maybe to go for a walk or, you know, work from home or whatever and have a bit of time? It seems to be that as soon as the weekend comes, they turn the rain machine on or, you know, the gods come out.
I don't know. I mean, it's the same as this week. I had very little work to do. And then as the week went by, more and more of it filled up. And now it's, you know, what are we talking, like nearly midday on Friday. And I still have more work to do than I started with. So it's, I don't know.
You break from it though, mate. You do seem to be sitting in front, you know, you're sitting in front of that computer for a lengthy time.
Indeed. Well, I don't know. The thing is, it depends on your perspective, doesn't it? I think you can get actual working like 50, 60 hours a week. You can get a hell of a lot done. I think the problem is a lot of people do long work weeks. They don't actually do any work in their working hours.
How productive you are, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How's things up there in the Medcare? I'm not going to ask how the weather is, because I know it'll be pretty consistent warm and sunny, but what have you been up to this week?
Yeah, hot, sweating. I just got to choose whether I go swimming in the pool, which is like 50 metres away from me, or I walk 450 metres and go in the Mediterranean. So that's normally my decision for the day.
Is that your hardest decision of the day? Is it?
That's the hardest. Well, actually, yesterday I went both, so maybe it's not a decision. But yeah, I normally go down into the sea about 6-7 o'clock as the sun's going down. The sea's nice, not too warm, but the sea's nice, and yeah, it's beautiful. It's a bit rough actually yesterday, but I don't know why, but maybe the moon's changing. It normally
has an effect.
Gives us a few waves, and I'm not sure.
Okay.
Only really know the cycle of the moon when it's Ramadan, because then, you know, the cycle of the moon is what dictates your Ramadan.
Good. Let's have a look at some of the news stories which have dominated the headlines this week. Election.
Wait. COVID. Medicare.
Oh,
no. Cool. Sorry, go on.
All right. No, so you're alluding. Yeah, all right. Let's just start with that one. I mean, this was the first televised debate of the 2024 presidential campaign. President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump clashed in a 90-minute showdown. Biden's initial performance caused concern among Democrats, though Vice President Kamala Harris defended him, noting a strong finish despite a very slow start. Trump attacked Biden's economic and foreign policy records, while Biden criticized Trump's criminal conviction and alleged attempts to overturn the 2020 election, calling Trump a sucker and a loser with the morals of an alley cat. Trump responded by questioning Biden's coherence and repeating several falsehoods, including on topics like abortion and taxes, while initially avoiding whether he would accept the 2024 election results. So, I mean, it was a bit of a car crash, wasn't it, for Biden? But what were your thoughts on the rest of the 90-minute debate?
I think Biden's mind's gone, right? Like, he's not capable of running the country, and it's as simple as that. And I say that as someone who definitely doesn't want Donald Trump running the US either. But between a rock and a hard place, you can't have Biden, you know, this is a nuclear power, you know, one of the largest nuclear powers in the world. He can't be running the country. And you know, when I was watching it last night, I looked at, you know, what we have in the UK and Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak, who I both think are, you know, useless on different levels. But at least they're at least they're sane, right? At least they have their minds intact. At least, you know, you ask them a question and they're able to respond. I mean, they could choose not to respond 99% of the time, but they're able to, you know? It's funny because you think we've got a bad choice in the UK. I mean, in the US, I think it's far worse. And the only choice, I'm sad to say at the moment, is Trump. But again, you know, it's the same. Is that Trump is, what, 78? His mind isn't all there either, in my view. And it's simply because he's next to Biden that he seems to be so lucid.
Standing together, and he actually looks pretty...
Yeah.
The point that kept flashing in my mind was that who is running the country right now?
Yeah.
It's got to be the inner state or whatever they want to call it, because it can't be him. I mean, he can't decide what he needs for breakfast, I don't think, to be honest. Never mind, you know, should somebody do this? So the country is currently not being run by a president. There is no possibility.
They've always said that the president is a puppet for main leaders. But at what point does somebody intervene and say, this guy isn't a fit, sound mind or whatever?
They have to. The time to do it, though, was a few months ago. It could have been fine. But even now, I mean, the election is in November, so you have, you know, a decent runway. Just have Biden stand down and just say he doesn't feel he's got the stamina for the job anymore or something along those lines. Put a new candidate in place and away you go.
Who do you replace him with, though? I mean,
there's not many good, decent choices, are there, in the Democrat Party, but somebody who can answer a question might be a good start. You know, I think there are so many voters in America who are floating voters. And even the ones who are firmly Democrat, they look at that and they simply can't vote for it. You just can't, can you? And that's pretty much the end of that. But then you look at Trump and you think, what's he going to do as president? Because, I don't know, just the criminal charges alone, right? Can he pardon himself federally? I mean, that's going to be a legal question, which is going to be super fun, but we're going to get answered soon.
Yeah. All right. So let's come over the pond to the UK and then look at this, obviously, the betting scandal, which has been, you know, it's massive in the media at the moment, that the Met Police has even identified seven officers who have allegedly placed bets on the date of the general election, with one officer arrested from Rishi Sunak's protection team, currently on bail and on restricted duties. The Gambling Commission is obviously also investigating the alleged cheating, while the police are handling inquiries where additional offences such as misconduct in public office may apply. So they basically found out now that one Met Police officer has won about £8,000. I mean, what do you make of this? You know, I mean, it's like from one.
You should have put more on, I think. It was a dead cert.
Yeah, well, I think if you're gonna risk going to prison and losing your job, £8,000 is probably not worth it, for the vast majority of people. On a serious note, I think that politics betting just shouldn't be a thing, right? It just should be banned in the UK or just
because most of it's going to be done on inside information. Of it's course, like I'm going to bet on the outcome.
Well, exactly. But I think potentially individual politicians perhaps should be allowed to bet on whether they're going to win or lose, as long as that's public information, because I think that'd be quite entertaining. But as a general rule, I think it's a category that just it makes politics less serious, and it's something that people should take seriously. And I don't know, but the fact that, you know, there's, I think it's on both sides as well, the fact that they're making money from the election day. I mean, go out as you've been going on the entire time for 14 years, essentially. Yeah. Group, like, take as much money out of the system as humanly possible, because I guess the Conservatives know they're not coming back into power anytime soon, so they might as well.
And what do you make, Charles, of the fact that Reform, who seem to be in the lead, have now dropped back to the Conservatives on the premise of the comments that Nigel Farage made about Russia?
I don't know. I think the thing is, the Conservatives, you know, for a long time being funded by Russian eminence, essentially. But I think that Nigel Farage says uncomfortable truths sometimes, and you know, I'm not defending Russia at all. They are the aggressor in the war.
But I mean, all he really said is that NATO had pushed eastwards.
Which they have, do you know?
You can't
argue with that. It's obviously, that's always more nuanced.
And in the same interview, I don't know if you saw, but the ITV presenter basically said to him, like, you know, at the end of the day, do you like these people? And he reamed off a few people and he said Putin. And he said, no, not a nice man or something.
The thing is that Putin, all he's ever done, and he's done some horrific things, but it's all just to advance Russia's interests, right? And had the NATO not advanced and Ukraine be made into a buffer state, there's a chance that this war wouldn't have started. But again, I mean, it's Russia and Ukraine have been kind of fighting each other on and off for centuries, essentially. And even this war, which, you know, people think started a couple of years ago, I mean, it really started back in 2014. So, do you know,
it's an escalation of that.
Well, I mean, it's going on forever and ever and ever, you know, and it has been for centuries. But I think that with Reform in particular, what I do like about it is that Nigel Farage, he says his opinions, and whether you agree with them or not, you can vote with him or not, but he's consistent in what he says every time, and he genuinely believes it. You know, I think he genuinely does. And so that's very popular. And yes, you might find that the polls drop a little bit, but I think there's a very good chance that the vote share Reform gets is going to be a lot higher than what the polls suggest at the moment.
I think so as well.
Do you think they would have a chance of actually winning if people had gave them a serious chance of winning? you know,
well, obviously it's first past the post, isn't it? So people think, oh, it's a wasted vote, and so I'm not going to vote for them. If everybody who thought that did vote for them, who wanted to, then potentially they could win. But again, it's a first past the post system, and therefore you're probably going to have, you know, mostly Conservative or Labour politicians. But then again, I mean, people don't, you know, if you take a longer view, the SNP, right? I know they're probably going to get wiped out a little bit in this election, but they came out of nowhere and took all of Scotland from Labour, right?
Yeah.
Canadian election in the 1990s, party there just got completely wiped out. So Reform, you know, which is effectively just like the new UKIP or whatever, there is a reasonable chance that they're going to do something quite seismic, potentially not in this election, but the one after. Because what's going to happen is Labour's probably going to win. Hung Parliament, possibly, but Labour's probably going to win. And in order to do what they're promising they're going to do, they're having to implement some pretty serious tax rises, which aren't going
to... No. You didn't listen to Keir Starmer.
No.
Said,
what's he saying?
He's not going to raise any taxes.
No, of course he's not. He's just going to... He's not going to borrow any more money, is what he said. He's not going to raise any more taxes, but he's going to spend more money than we're currently spending. So I'm not sure how his maths is going to work out. It'll be quite entertaining to watch. I think personally, what he's going to go after is pensions. It'll be SIPs. It'll be like the
pensions and the school and the VAT.
But I mean, even the VAT on private school. I mean, we've talked about this before. Regardless of, you know, how much money it raises, even if it raises like £1 or 2 billion or whatever it is, this is pocket change in terms of government spending. You know, how much money, how many times has that money been allocated to different things, whether it's 6,500 new teachers or mental health support in schools or whatever. Even if you get 6,500 teachers, there's about 30,000 schools in the UK. So it's one new teacher for every four schools. Not quite sure how that's going to help. Anyway, doesn't matter. Going to rant about it forever.
So tell me, who returned to Australia this week?
Was it you?
No. Assange.
Yes, well done. Julian Assange, he returned to Australia after a plea deal freed him from a London prison. At Canberra Airport, he was reunited with his wife and father amid emotional scenes. His wife, Stella, stated that Assange needs time to adjust to freedom after his 14-year legal battle with US officials over leaked classified documents. The plea deal saw Assange plead guilty to one charge of conspiracy to obtain and disclose national defence information, avoiding 18 original charges. So, I mean, obviously, we've probably all seen these. It was 2020, WikiLeaks released these shocking videos of civilians being killed and even journalists being killed in Baghdad and, you know, civilian deaths in Afghanistan. Is it a bit controversial, this one? I mean, has he served the time? Do the crimes he perpetrated actually endanger the lives of sort of servicemen and affect state secrets? Or was he right to out this information for the for the world to see?
I think it's the everlasting argument between classified information and freedom of information. And so the question is, to what extent can a democratic state where you've voted in politicians keep information from the general population in order to improve their lives, to keep national security, et cetera, et cetera? For example, and this is the problem, right? Where do you draw the line? Because with that amount of power, with no oversight, they can pretty much do whatever they want. And therefore, someone like Julian Assange comes in and goes, look, they're violating all of these, you know, rules of law or whatever, puts all the information out into the open. Fantastic. But then at the same time, how many lives did he endanger doing that? And, you know, let's take it at the most extreme possible example. Let's say during the Cold War, for example, negotiations between Russia and the US, had any of those been made public, that could have started a nuclear war decades ago, right? At the same time, what the US and other countries do under the, you know, umbrella protection of needing to keep information secret is just awful. So I don't think there are any easy answers, but I suspect that, you know, on balance, it's
on balance, he's been a very naughty boy.
He's been very naughty. But what do you do, Phil? What do you do? How do you, like, the problem is states need to be able to operate under secrecy in some cases. They need to. You need to be able, for example, right now there's a massive war ongoing between Russia and Ukraine. America is, you know, ostensibly supporting Ukraine and against Russia. And yet in terms of like the global stage, the two states are still talking, right?
Yeah.
They need to be able to do that without, you know, every conversation they have being publicized. And if you take it down like a really small scale, you know, you guys will have like a WhatsApp chat, right, where you're like talking to each other. It's not necessarily secret, but you wouldn't want all those personal conversations being publicized, would you?
But if you're a politician, you just you forget to upload it, or you know, it's absolutely fine to do that, you know.
But I mean, it's even like say you want to start a new business, right, and you're thinking of like 1,000 different business strategies. You're going to have some stupid ideas out there, for example. And if you take one message out of context, then it can make you sound like a fool. But actually, you have to try everything. you know? And it's to say that Labour's taxation plans in this country, for example, they were talking about potentially putting capital gains on primary domestic property, and they've shot that down. But obviously they're going to discuss everything. And I don't know, Oliver Sanders and like the leaks he does are such a high scale, I think it's difficult to know whether what he did was the right thing or not. But I do know that if something like that were to continue to happen, states wouldn't be able to talk to each other. You'd probably have more war overall. I don't know.
I'm not sure the issue with Assange is you know, they're basically pleading journalism that, you know, because he had the journalistic freedom to do this, he didn't have to say who he got it from.
Yeah.
So, but the issue with the US, the US wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
Like the US was not pulling any punches. They wanted to kill him. And then the UK stepped in, and obviously he stayed in jail for a period of time. Well, he stayed in one of the...
He was in the embassy.
He was in one of the embassies, and then
Swedish,
he was in jail.
Swedish embassy,
but this was 10 years.
10
years for him to actually then go to this US place, and then they effectively said you have to...
Sorry, it was the Ecuadorian embassy, sorry.
Ecuador, just... it wasn't Sweden, yeah, I remember. Anyway, I'm glad he's free. I shouldn't say it. Conspiracy theory. Will he be alive in 3 years' time?
Probably not.
No, will he be invited to some sort of probably an American cafe, but they'll be serving polonium tea in there.
The thing is,
the White House is the name
of the cafe. They'll bring him down to Salisbury on a tourist visa.
Well, he's either cut a deal, right, with the Americans, which he believes is going to give him some kind of safety. Possibly he has more information he hasn't released, which will go out upon his death, which, you know, if he's smart, he will do. Or alternatively, he's going to look over his shoulder for the rest of his life, which is not a fun way to live either. So, I don't know. Lose. Right. But anyway.
Over to Kev then. Let's go through what we're going to do, a review of the 12 stocks for 2020.
Yeah, so we're going to do a quick review of the 12 stocks, and then I'll ask Charles to give us his thoughts on them. I mean, they're overall, just looking at it from the whole 12 stocks position, we are currently 4.25% up for the year. We have 5 stocks that are up, and we have 7 stocks that are down. So I think we'll just go with them one by one. And we'll start with the top this time. I know we did the bottom last time, but let's start with the top this time. A magnificent 205% on the year, from 9.25 to 28.2 when we took this last shot on the Friday. So what's your thoughts on Guardian Metals?
Guardian Metals. This is one of my favorite growth stories of the past 12 months. And there's pretty much nothing has gone wrong so far. CEO Oliver Friesen has done everything right. You're likely going to get substantial grant funding land within the next few weeks to few months. Assays are coming in from Pilot Mountain, largest undeveloped tungsten deposit in the United States. Politically, tungsten has become kind of red hot. The US needs to get a domestic source of it going as soon as possible. And I guess it's a combination of luck in terms of the politics surrounding the metal, but also really hard work by everyone involved in the company. And it's going to go from strength to strength now. These assays are going to come back, and it's going to up the resource. You're going to get the grant funding to the feasibility studies. And yeah, it's all going to be gravy. I think it'll, you know, hammer down the door of 30p relatively soon. And then it's a question of, you know, where next? How far can it go?
That's the interesting part about Guardian Metal Resources now. It's got a market cap of £29 million, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't seem excessive for what it's got on its plate.
No.
At all.
Well, I think, you know, we were talking about, I'm trying to think of the word, we were talking about like 100 million market cap about like a year or so ago, weren't we? We were saying that's, you know, somewhere reasonable. It could, you know, and at the time people go, oh, no, not possible. And we're kind of a third of the way there now. I reckon it's doable. But again, it's to some extent now, you're at this stage now where the drilling is going on. There's done so much surface and so much technical exploration of the data that's available, but the drilling is now happening, and obviously the assays are going to start coming back, and that's going to be the proof is in the pudding kind of thing. That's going to happen over the next sort of 2 or 3 months. We're going to see, is Oliver right? Is there far more metal in the ground than we already know is there from the current? There is a resource there, but it's quite outdated now, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think he's right. I think it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing.
So can it do another 200% in the second half of the year?
I mean, the big question, there's two questions. The first is, when the assays come back, are they just going to like increase the tungsten resource, or is there going to be a big copper deposit there, for example, as well? That's the first thing. So if you have, for example, a tungsten on top of the copper, and you can mine both at the same time, and it's polymetallic, that would hugely improve your economics. And the second is the size of the grant funding. Did you see a sector of the US Department of Defense, they put out a presentation on one of the slides. Some of the companies were getting, you know, a few million dollars. Others were getting, you know, triple figures, millions of dollars. So how much is Golden Metal going to get? You know, we're kind of working on like maybe roughly 10 million-ish. It could be slightly less. It could be a lot more. And because it's so critical politically at the moment, I do wonder whether they could kind of land the jackpot grant funding-wise. In which case it could rocket further. What do you reckon, Kev?
I think it's going to get to probably £1, but I don't think necessarily it's going to do it this calendar year.
Yeah.
I think it also depends on how far they're going to go with these grant funding. I mean, if for the sake of argument, you got $10 million.
Yeah.
How much more could you upgrade these resources? And then, you know, the whole game is worth, you know, several $100 million.
Yeah, exactly. And
before you touch anything else, you know, that would be my thoughts. But, you know, you can't spend $10 million in 2 months either. So it's like, it's probably a game, isn't it? Yeah. And I mean, could Golden Metal Resources be worth a couple of $100 million in the next 18 months? I think the answer to that is yes. How likely? I think it's probably going to be a bit to do with the drill bit. And I think from speaking to Oliver that he's pretty damn confident that there's a copper porphyry dam.
And that changes everything.
That's only one, because I think he's also pretty confident there's copper porphyry Garfield as well, yeah. As well as Pilot Mansion. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like it's the beginning of the story, really, to be honest, and yet we're 200% up, so yeah.
I think it's the aim there, isn't it, over the past sort of 2 or 3 years. You know, a lot of stocks have done not very well. And so when something's up 200%, you go, oh, no, it can't go further. But like some of them do. Some of them just don't stop. Occasionally, you just have one that just is at the center of just a perfect storm of catalysts. And it just rises and rises and rises. And I really hope that Guardian Metal is, you know, one of those stocks. And I think that they're set up to be it. So it's just a case of what, you know, the SAs come back with over the next couple of months. And now I'll give you a much stronger indication of where it's going to go next.
Yeah. You've also, I suppose the other thing that you've got to look at with Guardian Metal Resources is how much of the stock, you know, just over 100 million shares, I think now, how much of that stock is in free float?
Very little.
It's not a lot, is it? It really is not a lot.
Well, we know that Power Metal owns 50% or like very just under. And we know that large holders, institutional holders, TR1s own another sort of 20 to 30% of it. And then that kind of 20% that's left over, which is your free float. I mean, I hold shares. I'm not selling them. There's a lot of that retail are holding them quite strongly, right? So even the ones that you don't know are definitely going to hold are holding. So the effective free float is maybe 10, 15% of the shares an issue. It's just nothing. And then the other thing is that you know that a Power Metal, they're not going to sell their shares on market at any point. And so you've got Power Metal, you've got Pure Bond, and then there's just, it's, the effective free float is so low that whenever there's a positive catalyst, it just drives the share price higher so much more quickly than it would in other stocks. I guess the caveat to that as well, you know, on balance, is that if there's negative news at any point, it'll probably fall faster too. But so far, we've only had the positive news, and hopefully we'll continue to only have positive news in the future.
Yeah, okay. So good wax lyrical about that. The second one is Prospect Energy. It's done pretty well in the first half of the year, even on the backdrop of sort of falling gas prices, and then it starts to come back, but it's up 45%. So what's your thoughts on Prospect? I know you've said before it's, you know, the for sale side is probably up, and I probably have to agree with you there that I think the for sale sign is probably up. Whether it's waiting on some of these licenses or not, I don't know.
Spain or Italy or both. Yeah, I think it's just going to go. You know, I wrote quite a quick article on it. I was going to do like an approach of a company and do like a really long form thing, but it doesn't really feel worthwhile because I just don't think it's going to be around that much longer. European gas, you know, they got it in both Italy and Spain. And the potential exploratory tenure in Spain as well, Tesorillo. It's just a slam dunk for a buyout, especially at the valuation it has now. I think it's just not going to be around much longer. It's as simple as that, really. We could wax lyrical about what the assets are and the production and the fact that there's no warrants and no debt and it's profitable and whatever else. But the reality is that they're producing gas assets in stable countries in Europe, and that holds value that potential buyers are just going to see and want to add to their portfolios.
Yeah, my only point to you is I think it will be about, I think, because I think they will sell at the asset level. and therefore it is in a company as such. It's a trading company.
Yeah.
So
you might find Spain or Italy goes first.
Yeah. So Prospects Energy itself will probably exist, but maybe it has a lot of cash in it. You know. Well, so
you know, do a special dividend, then go find some more assets to develop. Potentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that's a more likely scenario. But I think they'll be up for sale because that's the only way to really get the true valuation of them, probably in the current market.
I mean, the other thing is the number of wells they want to drill, the amount of exploration that they're applying for. They don't have the financial firepower to do it at the pace that they should. And so, that you know, whether, if it's not an outright sale, it'll be some kind of joint venture because they want to get the capital and drill lots at the same time. So, yeah. Prospects, again, bullish. I think that regardless of how high it's gone, it's going to go higher.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's only got a 25 million market cap at the minute, so it's not exactly pushing the boundaries in terms of what it is. Okay, let's move on to the next one then, the third one, which is Sovereign Metals. Now, Sovereign Metals is currently up 29% at 31.5p, current market cap of 173 million. Yeah, well, we just talked about buyouts.
This is a slam dunk.
I'll leave the story to you.
Yeah, I feel like we should let Phil chat in a minute, but I mean, it's simple, right? Rio Tinto own 15% of it. They're building this pilot. Right, this is the key story to understand is that Sovereign Metals is now building a pilot plant, which is going to be able to process, you know, I've done the math, roughly 5%. It's going to be roughly 5% of the processing power of like the main plant that they want to build in the future. And the general idea of the pilot plant is to prove that the flow sheets, the processing, that all of their theoretical ideas are going to work. And within the next sort of few months, we're going to know that the pilot plant is working and producing. And then I suspect Rio Tinto will put in an offer and that will be that. Now, one really important factor to be aware of is that the team behind Sovereign Metals, they've got the financial firepower and they've built plants, mines before. So if the offer from Rio Tinto isn't high enough, they can say, no, we're going to do this ourselves. They've got that, you know, capacity. But I think Rio Tinto, it's the largest titanium feedstock producer in the world. It's got a, what, £170 billion market cap. The pilot plant operation, just the pilot looks massive. There's photos and videos on Twitter. This is one of those big things. And, you know, it's kind of sad because in my mind, I'd rather, you know, as a long-term investor in me would say, I'd rather they don't sell to Rio Tinto, they do it themselves, because you've got an opportunity here to become the next mining major. But I think that given the choice between like building a mine, which is fraught with cost overruns and issues and difficulties, and taking a big, quick financial win, they'll probably go for the latter. But it'll be interesting to see, because the number that they want to, you know, sell it for has got to be high enough to make it worthwhile. And again, we're talking a net present value of just over $1.6 billion.
So, I mean, how would you value that as a buyout, though? I mean, would you take the capex costs and add a bit on? I mean, what would you say, $500 million or something like that?
It could be more. I mean, the other thing to understand is that they did that. Those numbers are, you know, old numbers now, and they're still being drilling more and more. And then on top of that, I mean, those are initial numbers on a pre-feasibility study. They could easily get, A, the net present value up, and B, but like the processing costs and the capex costs will probably come down the more they know about it, the more they understand it. It's really difficult because it sounds, I try not to be rampy about these stocks, but I think £1 billion, I think it could be done.
This pilot plant alone, this pilot phase we're looking at on X that they posted, is probably probably the size of some of the larger companies' full processing facilities.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's massive. It's huge. It's amazing because the scale of it is massive. And if this was your main plant, you'd think, wow, this is amazing, but it's not. This is again, you know, 5, maybe 10% of what the main plant is going to look like. It's trying to visualize that is kind of, you know, scary. But I think the value of it to Rio Tinto is just, you know, and again, you know, I've talked about this before. As small cap investors, we talk about hundreds of millions of pounds as like a massive amount of money, and it is. But when you're Rio Tinto, it's really not. It's you pay what you need to pay in order to get what you need to maintain your market position. And they don't want anybody else to have it. So, yeah, I think Sovereign is just, again, Sovereign Metals is Cassia. That's their flagship. And when it's gone, that'll be another one off the list. I mean, it's kind of sad because Golden Metal, Pilot Mountain, I think might get taken out at some point once you've expanded it. Prospects might get taken out. Sovereign might get taken out. And then some of the best companies we've got on the index will be gone and we'll have to find some new ones.
Yeah, but I think Golden Metal, or not Golden, Guardian Metal Resources is going to have many, many more assets.
You've got gold to explore, don't you? Yeah.
prospect is not going to go anywhere, even if it has a lot of cash, in my view, because it's a trading company. And Sovereign rolled out their other assets, their graphite assets, for that very reason, didn't they?
Yeah.
It's basically, here we go, we've got a clean shell, you can buy it. So Sovereign, I think, will be, yes, could be no longer. The next one then is African Pioneer. It's had ups and downs, really. At one point, it was up well over 50%. It's up 27% now. In fact, I think at one point it was like 3.3p. It was up nearly 70%. Come back down a bit because there's been a bit of a wobble in the old Zambian copper story. But what's your thoughts on that one?
I think, well, there's a few. It's got quite a large portfolio of assets, and you know, we don't want to spend too much time delving into every single one. But the first is, you know, they've got the option agreement with First Quantum, and this is key because Colin Bird is obviously, you know, the big dog at African Pioneer. He was the one who sold Gwara to First Quantum for, you know, $260 million, you know, back in 2009. So you've got this really strong agreement with like a major, and they're doing exploration on the ground at some of these properties. If everything goes according to plan, they've already agreed all the terms and conditions for, you know, getting an indicated mineral resource, getting a decision to mine, getting a mining, you know, a plant up and running. But then on top of that, you know, just exploration, you've also got Ongombo, and you're just kind of waiting there, aren't you, to see what the plan is, where it's going to go next. You may potentially know more than me, Kev, about what's going on with Ongombo. You spoken to Colin recently?
Yeah, we spoke to Colin recently, but I mean, Ongombo really is probably waiting for the Opengara license in Bazant, if it's been out, okay? Yeah. Because those two projects are going to be, you know, run probably simultaneously once they both have mining licenses. Ongombo already has the mining license and Opengara is waiting for it.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be a way then with the rail transportation to process ore, either in a new plant or something that's already in close to Wallace Bay, I think it is. So yeah, the Namibia thing is very interesting, but you know, the shoot the lights out with a market cap of £5.5 million is if First Quantum come back and somebody has basically, First Quantum or anybody else, has struck the copper in that northwest area. Because if that happens, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that African Pioneer could be worth 50 to 75 to 100 million pounds, and pretty quickly as well. You know, so in other words, it could be worth that within a few months, because basically First Quantum, if they know it's there, they're going to want to buy all those licenses, whether African Pioneer's licenses, Galileo's licenses or Extract's licenses. So, I mean, this is a big game. And if it comes to play, then I think you're going to have an enormous wealth creation very quickly.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, isn't it? You don't know which of these portfolio companies are going to strike the copper first. But I think there's just a general expectation that one of them will eventually, and it will be Bonanza. It's the hope, anyway.
Indeed. Okay, moving on then to more of a copper producer. And that's Jubilee Metals Group, which is currently up about 12%, just over the 7p mark. It's a bit of a surprise, this one. I thought it would have done much better, to be honest, because of everything that's in place. But what's your thoughts?
I think, well, you know, it's all about Roan, right? So we've got the, it was another slight delay, because, you know, this is Africa and there's always a slight delay. But, you know, the most recent RNS is effectively saying it's up and running, we're going into commissioning. There's a few electrical, you know, doodads to get going. But I think potentially what it is, I mean, my perception of it, and, you know, I'd love to, you know, talk to Leon about it soon, is that the proper ramp up is going to be another, you know, few weeks or so. But the potential over the next kind of 12 months is going to be massive. And they recently acquired another couple of mines to feed this processing plants. And yeah, I mean, I've said from the very beginning, Jubilee, if you're looking at like African copper, if you're kind of like, or just Africa in general, the junior resource space, Jubilee is like the best place to start, I would say, if you're looking to like build a portfolio, simply because it's large, it's profitable, they've got their fingers in all sorts of pies. I guess the other thing that maybe is just weighing on, again, it's up for the year, it's down a little, you know, from its peak of the year. But the other thing is the IRH, the Waste Copper Project, they're still doing due diligence. I thought that be up and running and, you know, get cracking already by now. So potentially that's maybe holding it back a little bit. And people are thinking, you know, why are we not already, you know, got going with the Waste Copper Project? You spoke to Leon recently, actually, didn't you, Kevin?
Yeah, the Waste Project. I think they've already ordered the construction of some of the...
I don't know. Sorry,
They've already ordered some of the construction, and the earliest as you know, this is Africa and this is Mofalira. I mean, we drove past the place probably, what, 2 months ago or 6 weeks ago. I don't remember when we were there, but it's a massive slag pelt. Absolutely, like, goes on some literally miles. But the scenario is that they were going to try and get the processing plants ready. That won't be ready until December anyway, I think, the first one. And the second one maybe 6 weeks to 2 months later. So you are not going to see any copper coming from those situations until first quarter next year at the earliest. And that's assuming everything goes on schedule.
And it's Africa, so probably.
And it's Africa. But the two things that they just signed, they look very, very prospective, and as in, you know, there's copper there and they're basically taking the ore. And it's going to go not to Rowan, but to Sable. Yeah, it's going to go to Sable. And basically that's going to fill Sable. So, you know, that's going up to Sable's capacity. And that's going to be somewhere in the region of 12 to, they're trying to expand Sable at the minute to go up to 16,000 tons of copper per annum as cathodes. This alone, I mean, do the maths. How much is 16,000 tons of copper at $9,500 per ton? And they get a premium on that because it's 99.99% quality cathode. Okay, so that would be $140 million of revenue. They haven't paid anything for the ore. They've just got to pay for the processing. So I think you probably knock off $40 to $50 million in terms of the processing. That could be a $90 million profit.
Yeah. I mean, the question for me is those two assets that they bought most recently. I say the question for me, the question, you know, a lot of people are asking, they seem to have got very good assets for very little money. But how have they managed to swing that? I mean, obviously, Leon's well connected, but, you know, both of them were bought roughly $2 million each, paid for in shares as well, mostly, wasn't it? So, you know, yeah, there's a massive amount of copper for not much cash.
The issue with Zambia in a lot of cases is that a lot of the copper that is at this level, which is 3 to 4%, is not actually prized, you know, because everybody's after the 5% plus copper.
Right.
And also, it's more difficult in some cases to process it. And they don't understand often how to process it properly, whereas this is really where the skill of Jubilee comes in, I think, and is able to process all of these different things in
yeah, they're not a miner, they're a processor.
Yeah, they're definitely, you know, a processor and an understander of how to get the best out of it. And I think that's one of the reasons they said that these people took shares, or these companies took shares, because they want to advance with the uptick in what's going to be happening with Jubilee, you know? So, okay, let's move on. Yeah, another potential miner, Greatland Gold. We're now moved, unfortunately, into the stocks that haven't done so well so far in the first 6 months of this year. Greatland Gold down 10%, 7.4p. What's your thoughts on Greatland? I really can't say very much because we don't know what's happening, because we don't know whether they're going to buy it or not buy it or whatever.
I mean, there's a thousand different ways it could go. We have no idea, really, do we, what the strategy is. And also the management, you're obviously in intense negotiations, whether they want to buy it out or get a new joint venture partner or whatever else. And obviously, they're not able to say what's going on either. So all we can do really is speculate. I mean, the only thing that I've said consistently about Greatland Gold is that prior valuations have valued their percentage of Havieron on corporate level, share price level, about 5.8p. So every time the share price has kind of dipped to that level, it's shot straight back up because you have a wall of buyers there. Now, it's at around 7.4p, and the reality is it's probably where it belongs at the moment because it's just uncertainty. And the market, the only thing it hates is uncertainty. And we don't know whether, you know, how is Greatland Gold going to buy, get Telfer and buy the other 70% of Havieron and then go it alone? Obviously, with Wiley backing it and the board that they have, the financial backing, it's something that they could do. Are they going to try and get another joint venture partner? Could Newmont, for example, not find a partner that they want to sell to and then just go back to the status quo? We don't know. We have no idea. So it's just a case of crossing your fingers and hoping. The only thing that I would say is that the board at Greatland Gold is comprised of some of the most respected names in mining in Australia across, you know, multiple, you know, and their work history is, you know, running the show at multiple majors. So they didn't come in for, you know, like a small operation. They're coming in for like a big payday. And so I think, you know, if you're buying at, you know, the kind of like 7-ish p level, you're going to see a profit in the long term, but you have to hold for a few years. And I guess if you're a long-term investor, you've been told that for such a long time that maybe it's starting to sting, but you're coming into the end game now. you would assume within the next 6 months or so, or possibly sooner, you'll get an update. This is what we're going to do. We've made a decision. And the second they make a decision, it will see an uplift because you'll take the uncertainty out of it. What do you think, Kev?
Yeah, I think you summed it up well, to be honest. I think my view is Sean can't say very much at the minute. Nobody else can say very much at the minute. My view is, I'd be surprised if the Havron doesn't end up in Greatland Gold stable 100%. I'd be surprised.
Interesting.
I think they're going to own it outright. I think it's going to take some serious finance to do that. And I think all of that is going to create an immense opportunity, to be honest. Because when that is finalized and settled, I think there's going to be a hell of a buying opportunity. You know, that's my view on that one. Next one is Aterion, okay? So we've got Aterion is currently down 23% on the year. And they've made quite a lot of progress this year. And yet the shares are down 23%. It's got a market cap of £6 million for a JV in Rwanda for lithium with Rio Tinto and some incredibly prospective copper licenses in Morocco. What's your thoughts?
I think the where the share price has gone is for such a, it's a micro cap. So it's this particular one, it's going to be volatile. Had it been up 25%, I'd say exactly the same thing. It's kind of, if you're a long-term holder, not particularly relevant, where it's up sort of 20-25% or down 20-25%. Because it's going to be, you know, where it goes in the long term is going to be based on this joint venture with Rio Tinto at the moment. Now, as I understand it, I haven't been following the story too closely, but the drill program, it's all been planned out and it's on schedule. So drilling is meant to happen in early Q3, i.e. possibly next week. So you're going to get a saves back. You're going to get a lot. Essentially, you're going to come into this point where they're going to find out, do they have something? Do they have the lithium that Rio Tinto was looking for? Because Rio Tinto came into Rwanda specifically for this JV, didn't they? So they're gonna start drilling. Hopefully they'll find the lithium they're looking for, and the share price will shoot right back up. Because again, $6 million market cap, it is a micro cap and it is a risk play. But why would a major like Rio Tinto enter an entire new country? It wasn't, you know, to keep Aterion happy. It's because they think they've got some licenses worth exploring. And then obviously that doesn't talk about the ones outside of Rwanda, the other licenses, which could also be really, really interesting plays. But I think the drill bit's about to go into the ground. The saves are going to come out. And you might find that 25% down reverses very quickly over the next few months. But again, you're at the mercy of the drill bit.
Yeah, I mean, a few buys, it would be level.
Yeah, literally, where we say, like, how many thousands of pounds worth of buys would it take to bring it back to flat?
Maybe probably 5 or 6.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we could probably do it now if we wanted to, but yes, that's not so, the point, you know?
Yeah, no, the scenario is that I think the drilling also in Morocco over the next while as well,
yeah,
which should have a very positive impact on the story as well. And they're definitely, as they've said themselves, we were in London for a presentation. They've opened the data room for Morocco to various big parties included. So, I mean, you know, there's a prospectivity there. That's without mentioning the Botswana licenses also, because they've just taken 2 Botswana licenses, I think it is, or maybe more, 2, if I remember rightly, actually, they said 6. But anyway, however many licenses in Botswana from an individual guy who needed somebody's help, obviously, to move them forward. So they're on the copper belt as well in terms of Botswana. So for £6 million, it's the same thing really as African Pioneer. Both of those companies could be 3, 4, 5 times their valuation by the end of the year if something big happens.
And they've both got agreements, you know, African Pioneer with First Quantum and Aterion with Rio Tinto, agreements with massive and massively larger companies who think they might have something. You know, it's not like these majors throw out agreements left, right, and center. They selectively pick what they think is the most prospective ground and they go for it. And yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, and again, you know, going back to this, you know, you're saying it's 25% down. I mean, on paper it is, but in reality, it hasn't really increased. In terms of
they raised at 0.7p, didn't they? And it's, oh, sorry, 670p, and it's now 60p.
Yeah,
I guess. The reality is at 70p, it wasn't really down very much, maybe 8% or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to the next one. The next one is, maybe we move to Phil here on this, gives us lead wax lyrical on this, is Celadon.
Sorry, I've just been doing other things.
That's right, we've been watching you, Phil. You're staring at the screen. It's been wonderful. Yeah. Celadon is your baby, isn't it? I think Celadon is one of your favorites.
Let's look at Celadon, 52 million market cap. Or should we look at Held, Hellenica?
Hellenic, yeah. Well, I think that's one of Charles' favourites, isn't it, Hellenic?
Is it Hellenic? No, not one
not of his at all.
I think I've spent the past sort of year, I said Hellenic, right? All I want is a photo of the cannabis. Whenever someone posts it on Telegram or Twitter, just like, you're growing this massive cannabis, you don't need to give away where it is or whatever, just a photo, one photo, or like a video. And they haven't been able to provide it. So, you know, like, I feel like I do want to call out the company, but why not? Why not just have one photograph of what you have? It's not hard to put on Twitter, and it would solve everything. But I suspect the answer is they don't have any.
Anyway, let's move to Celadon. Yeah. Phil, give us your thoughts on Celadon.
They obviously had the announcement, didn't they? I think it was back end of May, where they signed an introductory sales contract with a long-established American business. And I think they shipped two different medical cannabis products to the US, which was obviously the company's first international commercial supply. So it's great to see them doing these deals, and obviously international deals as well. But what else is it? So, I mean, you've been to the facility. I have yet to visit the facility, and maybe that'll be a good visit for Charles and I to do, you know, the back end of summer, and so we can actually see how it, because you were very impressed with it, weren't you, Kev?
Yeah, no, the whole place is very impressive. The valuation on Celadon at $52 million is ludicrous, based on the fact that this is actually going to be not someone who produces cannabis just to sell the stuff. This is going to be a pharma play, without doubt. You know, they've got the trials for the autism, they've got the trials for pain relief, all going on as we speak. Once those are okayed and declared, then, you know, the game's on. And they've also got revenues of probably more than half their market cap that's going to come in. £27 million deal, I think, was signed late last year.
And they did, the last fundraise was done at around, I think it was like 105p. So, I mean, like, it's, or 1.1 or 1.5. So it's...
Yeah, and it's down at 83p. Again, it's one of those companies that is very, very small free float. And the reason being is because James Short owns a huge proportion of it. So James Gareth Short has 40.58%.
Ironically, long on the stock.
And a huge amount of other people have got big. Paula Allen, Paul Mac Short, which must be a relation, also has 6%. I think those two are both his family members as well, so this takes him over 53%. So, again, there is very few shares available on the market, and he definitely has it in his mind this is going to be a billion-pound company or more. And I agree with him. He has the licenses in the UK. I don't think there's many others that have this. They have the trials going on. And there's no doubt this will move into the US at some point, you know. And I'm actually going to be speaking to James about the OTC as well, because I think it's very important that they start moving into the US before they move into the US, if you like. So, yeah. Okay, let's move on to the next one. All of these are down 25%, basically Aterians, Celadon, and Acuity Risk Management, which has been a very disappointing one this year so far. What do you think, Charles?
On Acuity?
Yeah,
I don't
sound too excited.
Well, look at the Telegram group yesterday. It was full of that. They were well annoyed about these options, weren't they?
Well, this is the thing, right? Like, it's been on my watch list for a long time, and I haven't pressed the buy button. And there's quite a few on my watch list, but it's one of the ones I really want to buy, but I'm struggling to choose to because you know, that raise and then those options thereafter. It just sends a message out to the market. It sends a message out to me as a potential investor who's not quite convinced yet that you know, the management aren't going to treat the investors with respect. That's what it sounds to me. I mean, they may be a client of yours, potentially. You know, they're not a client of mine. But I think that's the widespread view. But the good news is for the options, I think they were issued at 7.5p, weren't they? So the company thinks they're definitely going to get back up to 7.5p. So there is a ray of sunshine in the clouds. But it is disappointing to look at it from the potential that we potentially thought it had at the start of the year. What do you think?
The main disappointment, I think, has been that just contracts haven't been coming in, have they?
No.
I mean, the pun was that they brought in this anti-terrorism product called Storm. And yeah, we thought then there was going to be a deluge of sign-ups then in terms of getting new business. But they didn't really materialize, to be honest. So, and yeah, from a point of view of the market, if you look at what they've done in the last week, and they seem to have shot themselves in the foot a bit, as you put.
Their problem is now, it's a catch-22, it's a Hobson's choice. Well, it doesn't matter what you want to call it. It's they say next week they report, wow, we've got loads of new contracts and we've finally sold it, made loads of money. People are going to go at those options they've awarded themselves and they're going to get quite annoyed and the raise. But if they don't announce they've signed any of the contracts, having implied that they're going to, that's also going to be bad. So there's no way for them to win, is what it feels like at the moment. But, you know, but having said that, I mean, Angus, you know, I spoke to him months ago for like 5-10 minutes, just asking him about the company. This is a man who's been around the block and done it many times before. So there may be a master plan that we aren't party to, potentially, but I don't know. At the moment, it remains firmly on the watch list and not on the buy list.
Yeah, I think the master plan from the very outset, I think, was to make this cash flow positive and then profitable and then put the for sale side.
Yeah.
That was my view from the outset, and nobody really tried to change my mind in terms of when we said this. So is there upside from £4 million? If they achieve what they want to achieve, is there upside from £4.25 million? Probably, with the options and with the raise and everything else, maybe it's not £4.5 million. It's more, not much more.
Yeah. I mean, the one positive I would say is having just done the raise for £1 million, they now have capital for a decent runway. So that's, you know, a positive that, you know, it's not, if you're a long-time holder, it's not going to make you fill you with confidence. But if you're looking at it now, it's worth noting that, you know, they're not looking to get more cash on the table, you know, immediately.
Yeah, I think they had a runway anyway. But
yeah, well, they implied it, didn't they, in their results?
Yeah, they had a runway anyway. But now, really, you've got to be looking at a year and a half plus. And if they get cash flow positive, then effectively, then they've got a runway for infinity if that continues to happen. But yeah, we will see.
But they have to get the contracts.
Indeed. Okay, so let's go to the bottom three, which, as I say, I'm disappointed these are the bottom three is an understatement, but you can tell me what you think from this point. Conroy Gold down 52%.
Brutal, right, Conroy. I think, there's a few things there. The first is obviously their JV partner has walked away and they need to get a new one in place to do further exploration. The second is the pace of the exploration has been relatively slow, in my view, over the past few years. But the third thing is that the amount of gold, the amount of prospectivity that they have, the market cap at the moment, I think it's, you know, it's probably still a good bargain.
£3.35 million market,
which is nothing for what they have. So I mean, it's one of those ones. I mean, I was saying, I think, you know, we were talking about it when it was like 30% down, maybe. I was saying this is, you know, really good value. And if it was really good value at 30% down, at 50% down, it's exceptional. So I think that it's one of those stocks where you have to buy the shares and you have to wait a few years and hope a new joint venture partner is in the go. I mean, we had a chat with the professor a few months ago, and he made it clear that if Demir were to leave, there were other parties waiting in the wings. So let's hope and see whether something's going to come through in the next couple of months. I hope so. I really do.
I think it's quite likely they will have a joint venture partner back on board by the end of the year. That's what I think.
And then
if that happens, we've got to be looking at going back to market cap of at least £10 million based on the assets.
Well, I mean, my hope is, the problem with Demir is that it's a massive company, but it's not particularly well known in London, right? So if they find a new joint venture partner where, I don't know, say it's Barrick, for example, and I'm not saying it will be Barrick, but say it were to be Barrick, everyone knows who Barrick Gold is, and that will give you a massive boost compared. So it might end up being a net positive over time. Obviously, there's no comfort if you bought shares at the start of the year.
Yeah, I mean, the scenario there is the lady who's come on board, Mariam Moroney, who was board director at Barrick Gold, is now a board member at Conroy Gold. And so is there no smoke without fire in terms of that situation? You know, they bought somebody from Barrick on, she's seen the potential, and she's looking through all the stuff that they've done. You know, I personally still think this is one of those things that when people actually really get it, what's in the ground there in Ireland, you know, this is a GGP story. You know, do you remember when Greatland Gold was like less than a penny? You know, and everyone was saying, is the gold there? Is the gold there? And it was. and then they went bananas. Well, I honestly think this is one of those stories that's going to come. And, you know, the gold's not going anywhere, and neither is Commonwealth Gold, no matter what the valuation of the company is.
There's nothing more to say, as they need to get a new joint venture, and they hopefully will by the end of the year.
That JV, let's say, whatever you want to call it, cancellation, is really knocked investor, you know, it's knocked the market. It's knocked the confidence, unfortunately. But as you say, if they can find another JV partner of some description, an even bigger name, because a lot of people were like, who are they? Who are the Koch family? Who, you know, who are Demir? Like, genuinely, a lot of people didn't know who they were, even though they were, you know, you look at the net worth. But I think ultimately it needs another JV and it needs some progress. But you look at it as though they've had a lot of that work has been effectively a free carry in terms of the amount of information they've gleaned about the extra drilling. It's been invaluable, really.
Well, you only have to look at that. They've spent $6 million, which is about 50% higher than the market capitalization of the company now in the ground. It's absolutely bizarre. Okay, so we move on to the second bottom, which is Chill Brands, down 54%. And this just had a nightmare.
Want to comment on it, to be honest, at the moment, in terms of all the things, because it's a bit of a mess, isn't it, from the RNS with the board and you know, the things that have happened. So
yeah, legally, it's better for us to say nothing. But if you want to say something, then let's look for it.
Well, I think it's a job for me personally. It's simple as they got hit by the government changing the law on the vapes at the start of the year, and then you have a possible massive lawsuit coming up. It's as simple as that, really. I don't think we can say anything more at the moment until that gets concluded.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, and then the final one of the 12 stocks, which again held so much promise at this at the start of this year, and we were both so bullish on it, and we looked idiots because of it, is Teck Minerals, TM1, down 73%. Currently, $6 million market capitalization for what they have, which just seems ludicrous. What do you think, Charles?
Tech Minerals. Oh, let's see. Well, they replaced the CLM with another CLM, and it's not run particularly well. And I guess what worries me, there's two things. The first is that a management are choosing for some reason not to talk to their investors, which isn't helping. And the second thing is that they need to compromise on their business plan and just get profit going through the company, get revenue, get cash flow, get money coming out of the other end of the plant, because that's you know, essentially they've got to a point now where they have to get going with revenue. They have to have cash generation. It needs to be the number one most critical thing. And if that means you have to sacrifice your margins a little bit, or you just have to squash your pride down a little bit, then that's what they have to do. I don't know. I feel like investors are just kind of waiting, hoping for updates to come from management. And even if there's stuff that updates that they have are positive, they need to talk to them. Because you have a lot of people investing in TM1 who just don't know what's going on. On the other hand, they sold the lithium assets.
Yeah, the Leinster. It hasn't been confirmed yet. That's one of the problems.
No, I know. But I mean, assuming it does get confirmed, it was $10 million or so.
$10 million, which is already worth about 13 to 14 million.
Exactly. You know, and then there was a lockup period. But even so, confirm, get the shares in hand, and then your financial optionality becomes much, much stronger, and the share price will rise really quickly. So,
yeah, I mean, there are negatives, market capitalization now for Teck Minerals of £6 million.
Yeah.
If that Leinster deal is
goes
done,
through, it should
it's
double.
£10 million sterling.
Yeah, it should, right? It should, the market cap should, obviously, you never know exactly what's going to happen. But assuming that deal goes through, and they start to get some revenue and profit through, and you know, they get recyclers and the prospectors, and you know, all the other problems that they have, it's choppy waters, but it could be completely fine. But I think the problem is that the investor base is just they want updates. There needs to be a comprehensive update. What is the company doing? What are the numbers? Rather than trying to, you know, it feels a little bit like they're sticking their head in the sand, but potentially they're not able to talk to investors at the moment. This is the problem. Potentially whatever they're doing, they can't say it yet. So that could also be working into it. What do you think, though?
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I think that Leinster deal is a biggie. Yeah. Big cash flow coming in needs finalising. I think the prospectus obviously there's been big delays on that. I think most investors would have probably have expected the RTO to have happened now and the prospectus to have been done, and obviously the reverse takeover into, you know, for Recyclers Group and RG1 to have done, which has not happened thus far. And as you say, I think in terms of actual monetizing things and generating working capital and revenues, they need to find some way of taking these gate fees, or maybe just saying, forget the gate fees for the moment. We'll take the metal, the batteries in, you know, at whatever cost, you know, drop them off for free and get the black mass out and then get some offtake in place.
Just anything, cash flow is all it. Positive cash flow is all they need, right?
Absolutely.
And then it'll be fine, even if it's not that much to start with, because your worry is that you'll just continue to burn through cash and then go to the market and ask for more. And they can't do that now. So,
and unfortunately, they've done that in the form of these, as you say, these
convertible loan notes.
What will potentially be seen by the market as death spiral funding eventually?
It's possible. I mean, if they get Reliance Steel through, if they get cash flow, then they're fine. But convertible loan notes, if you don't stick to your timelines, they can kill companies. They're not. They do. You know, ask anybody who was invested in a Coppel, for example, what notes can do to you. Danger. Yeah.
I really hope that they get something out soon that sort of, you know, underpins the... I mean, it's frankly ludicrous. I mean, what is it trading at right now? Is it about 0.4p or something crazy?
Well, strategic positioning in terms of the UK recycling is amazing. They just get through the woods. They'll be, you know, off to, you know, a roaring start. But the investing confidence is just low, understandably. Yeah. And so you just have to... At the moment, if you're still holding the shares, I feel like you have to. You're holding on for hope now. It's too late to get out. So yeah. You just got to hope they have a plan and they're going to stick to it.
I can't say much, to be honest, but yeah, I agree with your sentiments. So let's keep sowing that. So let's see what happens. I suppose what I can say is that I believe that there are some pretty major catalysts that could happen in the next 3 months. But the reality is that they were talking about these catalysts happening 6 months ago. So let's see what happens. Okay, so that's the 12 stocks. Overall, the 12 stocks are up 4.5%, which isn't the best result. And to be honest, they've really been badly dragged down by those bottom three, though we've had obviously ones at the top with over 200% return. Let's just go quickly through the five gold rings. We've got First Class Metals, which has had its own troubles, down 57%. EPP, down 47%, Firing Strategic down 20%, which is a bit like the Aterian story, really. I think we could spend $5,000 on that and be back to level. Extract, which in my view is absolutely bizarre, is down 5%. And then we've got Incanthera, which is up 261%. Tell us more, Phil.
Incanthera, well, I alluded to it last week. We had Tim and Suzanne on, didn't we? And obviously I'd attended their presentation in the City of London, which was on the Tuesday of the previous week. And it was well attended. It was organised by The Shares Magazine and AJ Bell, very well respected, two big, large companies there. And as Tim said, it can only be described as a very buzzing atmosphere. You know, there was a lot of people there. It was standing room only. And the presentation is available on the Shares website and I believe on Incantera's website and also in the Telegram groups. So ultimately, if anyone's interested, they can obviously go and listen and hear Tim talk at the presentation. But very well attended. Great feedback from the investors as well that they had at the end of the evening when they obviously had drinks and canapes, I believe. And I mean, what can we say? The share price since the beginning of the year has been very, very good. I think you say it's up around the 200% mark, which is good. So, yeah, lots of institutional backing there and lots of support from the bigger, you know, Tyndall Investment Fund, which has obviously been announced to market. And just very excited. Obviously, everything's gearing up for the September launch. I can't wait to see how that's received. They've obviously gone from, they've doubled the order initially to another doubling of the order, gone from 25 to 50 to 100,000. And there's no reason why they can't continue to increase the amount that they produce on that first rollout. So, yeah, very excited about this one.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a quick comment on Extract, which has got an amazing license in Northwest Zambia. It's got the money coming from the Manika project to fund those licenses. We were at Silver King, which is one of the new licenses that it got recently. Why it's only worth probably less than the cash that it's going to get from Renika, I don't know. We had confirmation this week from Colin Bird that the money's coming. So, yeah, a bit bizarre, really. Firing Strategic, we haven't managed to get them on an interview yet, but we're going to. Again, great project that was in Zambia as well, that was from Glencore for Quicklime. And then they've got other projects, I think, in Cote d'Ivoire, which is to do with lithium, I believe. And then you've got one which is a very, very surprise, which is energy pathways. Exactly what the UK needs, gas production at home in situations that we really desperately need it. And it's down 50% basically from IPO. Just don't even go there. I don't understand why. And then first class metals was suspended for a while. Had a few accounting issues only, I think. But it's been hit by a few things. But ultimately, it proved its model by selling two of its projects. And really, the valuation now in terms of first class metals is so low. Okay, so FCM market cap £2.1 million. Well, the Zigzag target alone is probably worth in excess of that. So, I mean, it really has been beaten down for no apparent reason, because it's had its issues, okay? But I can see that things are going to be looking up in terms of that one as well. Okay, so let's move on, Phil, and I'll let you go first. Top three stocks for the rest of 2024.
For the rest of 2024.
That you think will go up. We're not even worried about they'll go up 100%. Like, we're not looking for the superstars.
Okay, I'll give you a little
what's
break.
What's going to go up?
Yeah, okay. Well, I think the first one will be no surprise. Will be Incantera. The premise that it's gearing up for the September launch, the product launch, obviously rollout in Asia. I think that it's still not even fairly valued at the current prices. So I think there's upside in it. So that would be my first pick. The next one I would have to say would be Power Metal Resources. So it's currently about 17.5p. I think the valuation of the Golden Metal shares alone, you know, obviously their 50% investment, is probably values the remaining assets at about 10 million or not even that, 7 million or something along those lines, because they've got a 19.5 million, sort of 20 million cap at the moment. So I think ultimately it's undervalued. I think they've had some really good results from the Tatti Gold project and the Molopo Farms complex. There's obviously the spin out things happening as well with the various other companies. Willan project, crystallization. What else have we got? We've got the Saudi army. There's just so many different interesting parts of that company.
The uranium bit.
The uranium bit as well, which we're going to hear more on as well. So for me, Power Metals at sort of 17.5p, 18p is a good one. And then I've been thinking a little bit about what I would go for on there as a safety that's dropped back. And I think I'd have to go with, probably would choose Jubilee Metals, on the premise that with Rowan being brought online and all the extra sort of assets that they've just put in, the Project M, the Project G, the funding, the deals they've done on those, the Mufalira, the IRH investment, at 7.5p or 7.2p or whatever it is currently, I think Jubilee has got a lot of upside from the 7p mark.
Okay, so we've got Power Metal, Incantera, Jubilee. Okay,
what do you think of those? What do you think of those?
No, I agree with all of your points of view. I think Power Metals is massively undervalued right now. I think Incantera is only going a sort of one way. We've seen a consolidation period in the last few weeks. And I think then, you know, in the next few weeks, we will hopefully see another uptick. And Jubilee, yes, I think Jubilee is undervalued and should go. So, yeah, I'd be surprised if there wasn't a plus after those three by the end of the year.
Put you on the spot then and say, what three would you pick now?
Okay, what three would I pick? The first one I'm going to pick is Guardian Metal Resources, okay, GMET. Though it's been our top performer so far this year, I don't see that stopping, to be honest. I don't see that, you know, 200% is still fair value for this company in terms of what they've achieved and what they get. If they get the US grant and if they, you know, find what they think they've found, or what Oliver thinks he's found in terms of copper porphyry, I can't see anything but going up. And the share structure of it also means that once it gets in demand, it's going to be extremely good. So that would be my first one. The second one, sort of outside the box, would be East Resources in Kazakhstan. We should be getting some sort of news very, very shortly, I think, regarding some sort of deal or sale for the VMS project. You know, this should be many multiples, in my view, of the market capitalization. So I really see that one. Plus the BHP deal with looking for porphyries. I just see that it's going to do extremely well. And I was going to choose Jubilee, but you've chosen Jubilee, so I have to choose another one. So I'm going to put myself out on it and say that from this low level, I fully expect the Teck Minerals will be higher by the end of the year. So my other one would be Teck Minerals, I think, TM1. Okay, so three stocks from you, Charles, that you think are going to go up in the second half of 2024. We're not looking for the shooting star necessarily, just the ones that you think, okay, I'm pretty sure this is going to be higher at the end of the year than now. And give us a reason why, like what is the share price now as well?
Yeah, no problem. Okay, so in no particular order, we'll start with one of our favorite sovereign metals. Yes, it's up 22% year to date, but I think it's got a lot further to run because when this pilot plant gets cracking and it produces the goods, Rio Tinto is going to look at it and they're going to go, yeah, we want to buy this thing. And whether they formally buy it or they just announce an intention, doesn't matter. A sovereign's going to go higher within the next 6 months. Second one is Asia Met Resources. They're currently at 0.8p. So they've come down a little bit from their recent spike, but they're going to get funding for their project over the line within the next few months, I believe. And then it's going to shoot higher. They recently...
with the ticker of ARS gets ARS.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Long-term holders have been disappointed, but you know, I've only recently got into Asia Met and I think this one is going to get over the line within the next 6 months. And when they get project financing for their mine, it's going to go bang. And then the final one I'm going to pick is Helix Exploration. They're exploring for helium out in the US. They've got a really, really great management team. They've got two drill campaigns funded and ready to go for Q3/Q4. And I think based on the work they've done so far and what they have, currently it's trading around 20-21p a share. I reckon it'll break 30-35p within the next 6 months quite easily, potentially higher. So yeah, I mean, you're asking not for shooting stars, but those are my three, and I think they could all rock it. But obviously, I mean, we made the joke earlier, legal in general. You know, if you don't want to take any risk, just get some, you know, FTSE 100 insurers, take your dividend of 8% and walk on your merry way.
What's the rationale on that, legal in general, just out of interest? Because obviously I've seen there's been a lot of talk on the boards, but I mean, do you think there's an upside in insurance right now? Is it because they're charging more on premiums and things? How does it all work?
It's just, well, I mean, their dividend yield is 9% and over the, you know, and they're relatively flat over the past year. Yes, they've had a downgrade from the banks, but at the end of the day, their Solvency II capital ratio is really high. They are more than covered for their dividend for the next couple of years. They've increased the dividend by 5% a year for the past few years, so I'll keep doing that. So I think it's just one of those companies where if you want something that's safe, obviously investing is never risk-free, but if you want something that's safe and has a decent return, then, you know, LGEN is one of those stocks. You know, I have it in my portfolio in my SIP. For example, I'm not going to become a multimillionaire out of it, but I know that that dividend is going to land every so often, and it's a nice day when it does.
Okay, last question. One shooting star each. What do we think could shoot the lights out in the second half of 2024?
It's difficult. We're looking at shooting stars, but looking for stocks that, you know, have got a really small market cap and potentially could, you know, explode. For me, I think it might be Alien Metals, ticker UFO. Their share price is kind of in the doldrums. Their investors are annoyed. There was another raise recently. It's trading at 0.12p, so kind of like a 9 million market cap. But Hancock, their flagship asset, it looks to me like they might get project financing over the line in the next few months, so I think that could rocket higher. But again, it's high risk, high reward. But you asked for a shooting star, so there we go.
My shooting star is African Pioneer. It's got a joint venture with Major, and really, if they strike what we think they're going to strike, it's going to shoot for the stars. So that would be my choice, First Quantum. And also, obviously, they've got a combo. If the license comes for Open Carib in Namibia, then that's also going to be another catalyst that could rocket it up as well.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with Cobra Resources because I think that one that we've talked at length to Rupert, they've had a lot of news surrounding the Boland Reassay results of recent. They had some results, Reassay results from the Yorana Southeast tenement as well. So I think it looks really good, and I think that the whole, you know, that the way that they extract these metals out the ground is game changing, you know what I mean? Like, so for me, I think Cobra is massively under the radar. I don't think people have really understood, you know, how big the Boland project is, and it's all about the REEs as well, so the rare earths. So for, yeah, definitely one under the radar.
It's a good pick, and also the fact is that the gold asset is probably worth more than the current market cap. So it's got a real backup plan as well in terms of things. It's a good thing. Very good. So I think we'll call it a day there. A lot of chat about a lot of stocks. And let's see how it all goes.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Charles. Great to have you as guest again.
It's been wonderful. Cheers, guys. Bye.
Thanks, Charles.
Okay, so before we move into the movers and shakers this week, there's an exciting company coming to market within the next 6 months. Today we're joined by Daniel G, CEO, and James Sheehan, Chairman of Priority AI. Welcome, gents.
Hi, thanks for having us.
How's everyone doing today, then?
Fantastic, sun's shining, busy as always.
Well, that matters, isn't it? How long have we got? Probably a week at max, you reckon?
Probably a couple of hours.
I reckon I've got about 4 or 5 months.
4 or 5 months. We've had our week this week, I think.
Yeah, that's summer over. So, I mean, obviously, we're here to talk Priority AI, and I quote from your website, which is always a good place to start. Priority is a technology-driven, human-delivered platform made to help businesses grow. Every interaction is driven by a custom AI GPT, which is built and trained specifically for each customer. Activating Priority products unlocks access to unlimited use of business growth services, ranging from investor relations to commercial lending. Priority is the Swiss Army knife for SME growth. Select an icon to find out how our tools can help you focus on your priority. So presumably anyone can demo the technology, which I'll obviously make sure I do later, but just talk us through why and how the business was formed, please, Dan.
So I guess that the why is that James and I have worked together off and on for over 10 years now, and we've worked helping private individuals manage their money, and we've all helped with public companies going out and accessing growth capital. It's been a fantastic journey. We've helped thousands of companies over the years, and both individually, private and public, but we've also seen how a lot of that capital has been deployed, and traditionally for growth companies, they're deploying it with growth advisors, and what we might see from that is anything you can think of, right? Anyone that's going to use it, kind of help a business grow, that might be an investor relations team, a public relations, social media managers, non-exec directors, corporate advisors, all these kind of people that help us as entrepreneurs, obviously growing our own business as well, fill the skill sets that we don't have and we don't want to go and employ big teams around. And we saw a lot of that capital being deployed in a way that we felt was inefficiently, but we kind of, you know, growing our own business as well, we were engaging the same advisors because there wasn't any alternative out there. If we wanted to grow the business, we had to go and spend money to get people in the tent helping us drive towards a common goal. We started questioning, is there a more efficient way? Is there a way that we could access those growth advisory services at a lower price point with a kind of a quicker time to action? And the answer was no. So we set out building Priority, which is a platform-based solution for businesses, whether they're private, whether they're public, whether they're big, whether they're small, any stage of their growth journey, to access those retained advisory skills for a single price point, super cheap, but using technology to make it super, super bespoke for their business.
So if anyone is interested, then please contact us, send us an email. There'll be a full interview coming out this week as well. This is just a taster, and they're going to do a presentation for everybody who is interested. So if you are interested, give us a shout. Just send us an email on admin@sundayroach.net, and we're going to set up a presentation with James and Daniel.
Okay, so we've had a few movers and shakers of the week. The top mover is a company called Symec Atlantis. The ticker's SAE, and it's up 131% on the week after it released its audited results for the year. Key financial highlight included a profit of $23.2 million versus an $11.1 million loss in 2022. 292%.
That's a bit of a change.
Well, that's why it's up 130%. I mean, that's a massive. It's a 292% revenue increase to 15.3 million and a significant rise in the net assets to 44.2 million. So, operationally, finalized payments for the. It's all to do with the 230 megawatt Uskmouth battery energy storage system project. Commenced development of an additional 600 megawatt. BESS at Uskmouth and received planning approval for 120 megawatt BESS, which is the battery energy storage system. So very good to see homegrown, you know, energy storage solutions and energy, as you know, obviously very on topic at the moment. The worst performer of the week was Mustang Energy, which is down some 80%. They confirmed the completion of the acquisition of Cycle AI following the court's approval of the scheme on the 26th of June. Consequently, Mustang now owns the entire issued share capital of Cycle. So Anything else on the radar, Kev? I know Kendrick have had a good week again. I think they're up about 35% again this week on the back of last week's move. So they're around the 1.1, 1.2 mark. What did you make? I think they've got down to as low as about 0.3, 0.5, 0.4, didn't they?
0.3. So, I mean, we're still looking at, maybe it's gone up three times effectively since then, or maybe even a little bit more. But we've still got a market cap of 2.68 million. I mean, it came to market at 8 million market cap with these assets in Scandinavia. It's by no means overpriced. You know, I suppose a little bit like First Class Metals in that respect. You know, you're talking about 2 million pound market cap with assets undoubtedly that have probably got significantly more value than its current market cap. So, yeah, I don't think it's anything out of the ordinary, but there's obviously been some buying and people are sniffing some serious potential there, I think. So, yeah.
Okay, good. Well, let's talk quickly sport roundup.
Did you watch that scintillating England performance then?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's not a lot we can say. Well, I did watch it, but apparently Harry Kane was involved and watched a different game to me because he thought they were excellent
I watched it and fell asleep.
Yeah. So England, we all eyes now towards England Slovakia, which is obviously this afternoon at 5 PM UK time. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I've not seen one team other than maybe Austria that have actually looked really good or good. Georgia beating Portugal is probably the highlight so far. I don't know what you made of that, but I thought their team, the spirit of it, seeing Georgia and seeing the upset to Portugal was phenomenal.
It was good to see, wasn't it? And I mean, Austria have gone for people. They've put the teams out there. They've gone for it.
Yeah.
Now, if the England team just went and did this, I think even if we lose, we would be happy.
It's like they were scared when you watch. It was like they're passing and everything. They were timid. They didn't have that fighting, as you say, just to go and grab it. It's just so lackluster, isn't it? I don't know what's going on with that team.
Yeah. I think you summed it up. It's lackluster. It's just not clever as a whole thing.
And then we had the absolute whitewash. Did you see the cricket England India and semis? I mean, what you were sending me messages saying they are taking a battering.
Oh, they're absolutely hammered. I mean, India definitely got well over par on that wicket, 170, I think it was. And then England just didn't bat. They just didn't bat. I don't know whether is there a third and fourth place playoff there for Afghanistan against us. I don't know whether there is or not. Probably. But finals now of South Africa against India, which probably in reality were two best teams in the tournament. So they both finished top of their groups. So
Saturday, by the time that's gone out, there will have been a decider. But who's your money on, India or South Africa?
It's hard to bet against South Africa in these finals, I have to say. Whether it be cricket or rugby, it's hard to bet against the South Africans.
I'm going to go India.
Yeah, it depends on the pitch. You know, if the pitch is slow pitch, then it's a case of spinners will have a real big impact, I think, with the Indians, because that's how they blew England away. They got 12 overs of spin out of the 20, and they basically just nailed them to the floor. They didn't have a choice, or didn't have a chance, really, I think.
Yeah, we've got the Austrian Grand Prix as well on Sunday. It looks like Verstappen, he's topped the first practice before the sprint qualifying, so that one looks good. Okay, well, I think on that note, we've talked long enough. We thank our guest, Charles Archer, this week. And we'll say, if you like what you've heard, hit the subscribe button and then the bell icon for any future notifications of any future episodes. And have a great weekend. And let's hope we can all enjoy the football.
Yeah, win or lose, I hope it's a good game.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.